Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neve Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Good evening and welcome to The Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Lydia Elcorey.
And I'm Cathy Weston. A very warm welcome to the show this evening. We're talking this evening about eating disorders, very, very prevalent across the globe. No one really knows what causes them. And just this week, actually, we heard that according to the NHS, the number of hospital admissions across the UK for teenagers with eating disorders has actually nearly doubled in the last 3 years, increasing from 959 13 to 19 year olds in 2010-2011 to 1,815 in 2013-14. And the Royal College of Psychiatrists said much of the increase is down to societal pressure made worse by online images. So lots of people with lots of different views as to what actually causes eating disorders in children and young people. And hopefully on the show tonight we'll be able to fill you in on this topic a little bit more fully. We're going to be joined by Rebecca Perkins, who's a coach and mum living locally but who's had very first-hand experience of her child actually having an eating disorder. And later on in the show, Deanne Jade, who's a psychologist and founder of the National Centre for Eating Disorders, and Dr. Alison Cowan, who's our own local GP. So just to recap, Rebecca is actually the author of 40 Words of Wisdom for My 24-Year-Old, a Parenting Manifesto. She trained as an NLP practitioner and coach and really is a role model for people who want to make big changes in her lives. And she's actually appeared on other radio shows like Radio 4's Women's Hour, BBC Radio London. She writes regularly for the Huffington Post. And at the age of 14, her daughter was actually diagnosed with anorexia, which of course was a very traumatic time for the family. And working closely with her daughter and a variety of health professionals, thankfully her daughter has fully recovered and is now at the age of 22, living a very, very happy, active life. So we're hoping actually to have Rebecca Perkins on the phone at the moment. Let's see if she's there. Are you there, Rebecca?
I am. Can you hear me?
We certainly can. Welcome to the show.
Right,
Rebecca, we've already explained to our listeners that you're actually a coach but also a mum who lives locally and who's actually had first-hand experience of your child having an eating disorder. Tell us a little bit about that story and what happened, Rebecca.
Okay. You know, eating disorders is it's a very, very difficult subject to talk about, and it's interesting because this all happened at the start of 2008, and I've been reflecting on it today in kind of preparation, and it still brings a huge emotion out in me, as I'm sure you can imagine. And I remember so clearly the day that I realized, I think I fully accepted that my daughter had an eating disorder, and it happened on New Year's Day back in 2008 when we'd had family around for New Year's Eve, and my nephew had remarked to my sister, who then passed this information on to me, does she have an eating disorder, because she didn't eat much, she scraped the topping off the crumble, she didn't eat any potatoes, and it was when my sister actually said this back to me that I felt like I'd been hit in the stomach, because it was the worst day of my life, because I had known deep down that there was something wrong, but to have somebody else then show that to you in a way, that they too felt there was something wrong, it was, in a way, it was like Pandora's box being opened. It's not knowledge that you can then unknow, if you like.
That's right, it's sort of a final admission that there is an issue. Rebecca, looking back in the period before that day, were the sort of the signs that you look back on now and are aware of that perhaps other parents could benefit from hearing?
I think there was an awareness that she was exercising a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a problem with that. I exercise a lot myself, so, and it's something very much as part of, you know, it was part of the family. But she wasn't replenishing, she wasn't eating what I felt was enough to kind of to compensate for what she was losing while she was training, if you like. I noticed little things that she was stopping eating. So things like fats she was restricting in her diet. So there was no more butter on her bread, or she wasn't eating any crisps, which in themselves, you know, you might think, well, that's okay. They're not healthy foods in a way. But actually, as part of a kind of a diet for a growing teenager, it was this restriction. Then the carbohydrates started being reduced. She started chewing gum a lot. She started drinking fizzy water or Diet Coke. And I tend not to keep, I never really kept those fizzy things in the house. But the chewing gum, it was only in hindsight that I realized that was trying to stop her hunger.
And Rebecca, what age was this at?
14.
14, okay.
Yeah, so 14, she was, her 15th birthday then was in the February. And by that time, I broached, and I have a very good relationship with my children. I did have, and I do now. But that time became very, very tough. Because, you know, I had to broach this subject with her. And it's a really tough thing to do as a parent to say, I'm worried. I have concerns that you have an eating disorder. I have, there are worries around anorexia here. Because they want to hide it as well.
And Rebecca, was she actually physically, you know, very, very thin at that point?
No, not at that point.
No.
And this, I think, was the interesting thing, but also the worrying thing, was that the minute that we spoke about it, and she did agree to come along to see the GP with us, and I'm very fortunate to have a very good GP at the time, and it was almost like, and I've not really spoken to her about this, but for me, what it felt like was that Mum will catch me, so she almost, you know, her eating then got worse, so she lost more and more weight. And that, to me, was really worrying, because then, of course, as a parent, you start questioning, you feel guilt, because,
yeah.
I'm sure that's something that every parent feels. What have I done wrong that my daughter or my son should want to starve themselves, to deny themselves of life, in a way? Because that's, you know, that's where this could head. And your feelings of your fear, despair. There's a helplessness that you feel because you can't make them better. It's not, you know, this changes everything. When they're sick, when they're little, we can give them Calpol, we can put a bandage on something. But with this, you know, I was in the dark. And you're making this up as you go along, how to help, what's the best thing to do, how can I encourage her to eat without being forceful, losing my cool, getting angry, because these are not helpful. And it's an incredibly difficult time, because you feel like you're on eggshells. As I say, I kind of made this up as I went along. We had, our GP directed us to our local hospital. I was living in Southwest London at the time. And we went to have weekly appointments. So she wasn't in hospital, but we went for weekly appointments with a nutritionist and a psychiatrist. Because this is serious. It's serious stuff.
And Rebecca, when did you realise that what was you may have thought in the early days was a sort of a she's gone off food or something to do with diet and exercise and body image, that it suddenly becomes something to do with mental health? You mentioned a psychiatrist there. When did at what stage was that? Was that a year in, or was it early on? Or?
No, it was quite early on, actually. And for me, as I say, it was almost like once we'd named it, she actually got worse very quickly for a period. And what I found was that, for me, interestingly, I was training as a coach at the time, so I was able to look at this from a different angle as well. And for me, what I was able to do was to differentiate between my daughter, her identity, who she was, and the illness. And that's when I noticed that this was mental illness. Because, for example, when the anorexia was speaking, and I say it like that because that's what it was like, her voice was different. She was angry. It was like a possession, which sounds really dramatic, but it was as different as that. And I knew at that point that this wasn't, it was like something had taken over my daughter. And I've read a lot about this, and this is what people say. It is, you know, some people call it the minx, or, you know, it's the devil that kind of takes them over. And it's really important to differentiate between the two sides, so that my daughter would then, once all the rage had come out of her, and, you know, I was the whipping boy, and that, you know, I was making her eat, is what the anorexia was saying. And then it was like she would collapse because she was exhausted, and she would sob and sob and sob in my arms. And it's a grueling thing to have to go through.
Rebecca, tell us about the beginning of recovery and the breakthroughs that you began to make.
Yeah. I think the most important thing, and for me, that's critical in all of this, is unconditional love. And yes, we love our children unconditionally, but this is calling on something else, because it's really tough, because there are days when they won't eat, and they distrust you, and they think that you're against them, that you have to call on all of your reserves of unconditional love. And it was, I think, at that point, knowing that love was going to win out, that my daughter slowly began to acknowledge that. They have to want to get better, because as I said, you can't make them better. They have to want to get well. And until that point, then you're battling against a brick wall, because you can't make them eat.
And Rebecca, what was the tipping point for her? When did she decide she wanted to get better?
I remember we'd actually gone away for a weekend as a family, and we were walking along the coast, actually, down in Devon, and she took my arm, and she said to me, she linked her arm in mine, and she said, "Mummy, I want to get better. I don't want to be like this anymore." Sorry, I'm getting quite emotional just at the thought of it. And that was the beginning. We had many backward steps, many, many backward steps, but for me, that was the first sign that she wanted to get better.
Now, Rebecca, many parents listening will be thinking and wondering about her earlier life. You know, did she demonstrate? Yes. Was she? When did you think this relationship with food changed? Was it before 14, or did it happen very sharply?
No, I suspect. I don't know. And the thing is, as a parent, you can beat yourself up about, you know, what was it that I did, and what happened in life and family and things to bring this about. And the honest truth is, I don't know. We've always eaten well as a family. Food has always been a very important part of our life. Generally, we sit down to eat and talk and all of that. But for me, anorexia is about control, and that's what I saw in my daughter, that she's very, very bright, she's a high achiever, and that has come from her. And she, my marriage was going through a really rocky time point at that time, and I'm since divorced. Whether she felt, you know, she will say in reflection that it was the one thing that she felt she could control in life.
Mm-hmm. And we've heard quite a lot about that. We'll ask Deanne, who's going to come on a little bit later, about this issue with control and anorexia, which is quite interesting. Let's focus on the positives. In terms of her recovery, for parents listening, what is your best advice? You've mentioned the down days that come and the up days and the sort of irregularity of recovery. What would you say, what's your best advice to them if they're facing this with their teenage daughter or son at the moment, in terms of what to say on a daily basis? And
I think, interestingly, what I would say, there is, I read a lot, but there is one particular book that for me was absolutely brilliant, and I don't know whether you want me to give you the title now or later.
Yes, please, do mention it.
It's quite a long title. It's called Skills-Based Learning for Caring for a Loved One with an Eating Disorder. The author's name is Janet Treasure.
Lovely, easy name to remember.
Yep, Janet Treasure, and it's the new Maudsley method. And for me, it was, as it says, it's very skills-based. So I would say to people, read as much as you can. Find a book that really resonates with you, that you can understand. What I liked about this book was that it asks you things like, what kind of carer are you? And it gives in animal metaphors, which was wonderful. So, you know, try not to be the kangaroo parent where you've got them in your pouch and you're going to hold them tight and make it all better. And nor are you to be the rhino, which is going in there and saying, right, this is how it's going to work and this is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
You need to be what they say is it's like the great St. Bernard dog who is there as a carer. And I really liked that idea. That worked for me. Definitely unconditional love. Absolutely. That is the key, I think. Carry on life as normally as you can with the rest of the family.
Yeah.
Because everything changes. But they need to see that life goes on.
And Rebecca, in terms of that, do you mean still have family dinners, still make Sunday roasts, still lay the table for the right number of people, still just have the routines around the anorexia?
Yes, in a way. I think if you have family routines and family meals together, then continue. But don't get, have your conversations and bring, we'd bring my daughter into conversations. But over time, we found it became impossibly stressful.
Okay.
Because that you're measuring food out, or she's sitting there and you're not eating. It's about picking your fights. And sometimes she would feel safer just to sit and eat with, I had a younger son, to sit and eat with him. Or just it was her and me. Not eating on her own, because that's isolating again. So this is why I say it needs to, keep the family together as much as you can.
And Rebecca, now that she is recovering, she's still young, but she's recovering.
Well, she's 22 now.
How do you feel now in terms of that she's done so well? You must be so relieved that things are progressing. But can you sort of ever lose the legacy of it? Can you get over it as a family? Can you, for people listening who might have been dealing with it for so many years as well, what is the light at the end of the tunnel, and how do you manage it?
I think it's taking day by day, which sounds, my daughter doesn't live at home anymore. She's, she graduated and she works and lives in London. I think it's something that she would agree that she thinks about food every single day.
Yeah.
She eats very well, and food is very much a part of her life as well. And she exercises, but she is very, very healthy. She's, a good weight. She won't ever get on a scales again.
Okay.
Because that was part of her legacy in a way. Interesting, and I know when we spoke earlier, a while ago, that I mentioned that she and I are going to be writing a book together about our experiences, as me as the carer and her as somebody who suffered. It's something that I have to tread very carefully with, because my deepest fear is that it triggers.
Yes.
So we have to, I have to be very sensitive. around food. But having said that, she will, she, you know, we'll go out to eat, or she will come here, and she eats very well, very, very well, in, you know, totally normally.
Well, Rebecca, I thought we're going to have to move on and speak to Deanne Jade, who's the founder of the National Centre for Eating Disorders, in a moment. Thank you so much for sharing your lovely story, and we're very delighted that she has had a positive recovery, and I'm sure people will draw great hope from that. Do you have an idea when your book might be written, that people could access it?
I don't know. I mean, I'm early stages in the writing. You know, I would like to think next year.
Okay.
But when during next year, I don't know.
And if people want to read a little bit more about you, because you have written another book, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I've written a book for women in midlife.
Yeah, we'll have to do another show on that, Rebecca.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
But if people want to get in touch with you and learn a little bit more about you as a coach as well, or an author, it's RebParkins.com.
That's it, yes. That's the best way to get in touch. And they can, there's a contact page there that they can get in touch with me that way. And, you know, if there's anything I can do to give comfort, then, you know, I'm more than happy to do that.
Thank you, Rebecca. All the very best.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to The Parent Show on Radio of Ireland 92.6 FM. This evening we are talking about eating disorders in children and young people. We've just been speaking to a very inspirational lady, Rebecca Perkins, who lives locally and who had first-hand experience. She was sharing her story there of her daughter's entry and recovery from anorexia. So we're very grateful to her for sharing that. And now hopefully we're joined on the line by Deanne Jade, who's a psychologist and founder of the National Centre for Eating Disorders. Are you there, Jade? Deanne? Deanne, are you there?
It's Deanne, yes.
Oh, lovely. Sorry about that. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Deanne, we know that you run a very impressive centre which gives parents and carers and patients a huge amount of access to resources and treatment. We've just been listening to one mum's story of her daughter's anorexia, and a few things are in our minds now. We're thinking about the causes of anorexia, the treatment of anorexia, and the sort of the best messages that you can pass on to parents who may be actually going through it at the moment.
Okay. Well, I did actually hear Rebecca, and I was very, very touched by her story. She explains the illness extremely well, and I think what happened to Rebecca is what happens to pretty much every parent who suddenly becomes aware that there is an eating disorder in the family, that it's kind of shadowed its way into the life of the family. And of course, Rebecca is usual in the sense that a lot of parents think, oh, well, my daughter's just going through a phase, or my son, because boys have eating disorders as well. They're just exercising, they're just working hard. It's not really happening. And then suddenly you are aware that there's a problem. And when I see young people, their parents bring them to me, and I say, well, I do think that your child has anorexia. They often break down because it's the diagnosis they actually don't want to hear, because it does change everything about how life is going to be. Life as they knew it is going to change. That's very hard.
And Deanne, how does anorexia, for example, change family life? We've heard about it through, you know, Rebecca, the changes at mealtime, the hiding perhaps, and keeping things, and the personality changes that might take place. I mean, what can, as parents, do, when they get that diagnosis, is it literally head first into sort of clinical treatment with a psychiatrist, or what's the sort of intervention, and what are the parents meant to do at that particular point for the best?
Well, I like to wind it back a little bit, and I was thinking about your earlier question, which I could answer if I may, and that's about the issue of cause, because that's what a lot of parents want to know. Well, first of all, the thing is, Rebecca was right. Having the diagnosis, it's almost pointless to give it, because it doesn't change anything, and when it's when it's there and it's in the room, people often get worse. It's almost like they're struggling with themselves to try and pretend they're normal, and they're not normal. And then when someone says, well, you have anorexia, they then decide, well, I can now behave like an anorexic, so it gets worse. And parents often want to know what caused it, what's the problem. Is it the family? Is it distress in the family? And lots of families go through distress and it doesn't cause anorexia. But what we do know, and Rebecca might be quite surprised to hear this, is that we think anorexia goes back a very long way before it ever shows itself in weight struggles. And there's usually a child who is very sensitive, takes all of the problems on her own shoulders, very perfectionist, and instead of just, and has very low self-confidence, so that if they get 99% in an exam rather than 100%, that's the kind of child who beats themselves up for not getting it right. So deep down, no matter how well they're doing, they have very low self-worth. And the effects of this kind of sensitivity are very small when they're young, but as soon as they grow older and they have to start living on their own and taking responsibility for their own lives, their coping strategies just fall away. And they look around to find something to control. This is very uncommon. You have to remember that anorexia is only one of a number of eating disorders, but it's usually a combination of high sensitivity, paying a lot of attention to detail, very low self-confidence, very poor self-esteem, and feeling out of control. So when they go on a diet and they start controlling food, it feels like the one thing they're good at. And it starts benignly, maybe with a diet, maybe with extra exercise. But whilst most people just love giving up a diet and getting on with their lives, the people with anorexia, it becomes almost like an addiction. It becomes something that they can't let go of, because if they did, it feels as if their world would fall apart.
And Rebecca, are the causes the same for boys and girls?
No, it's Deanne.
Sorry.
But the causes, it's okay. Actually, I do share something in common with Rebecca, because even though I treat eating disorders, my own daughter went through a phase where she had an eating disorder too. Doesn't matter how expert you are, it can still come into your own family. But boys and girls, exactly the same thing. And if I track people, these young people, back to childhood, I'll find the same things in boys and girls. They're very anxious children. They like everything to be ordered. They're very perfectionist. They're very high achievers. And for boys, it often starts by exercising. Then they start cutting away their diet. And for girls, it often starts with, as Rebecca said, feeling too big, even if you're not too big, and just shaving away one thing and then something else and then something else. And then they're quite surprised to find, well, you know, I'm allergic to this and I've given up fat and carbs are bad for me, and suddenly I've lost 20 pounds and I'm kind of feeling light, and I can't bear the thought of putting on any more weight. Same for boys, exactly the same.
And we hear all over the media about what they believe to be the reasons for eating disorders, you know, the social media pressure, fashion industry, pressures on young girls, for example. What's your sort of view on what we hear in the media about those eating disorders?
Well, there's three main kinds of eating disorders. One is anorexia, and you've heard from Rebecca on that. I could talk more about that, but there are other eating disorders that come directly from dieting. And the response to dieting, which is usually control of food and eating, and so the two less well-known eating disorders are bulimia nervosa and binge eating or compulsive eating disorder. And those two disorders affect more people than anorexia. But those are caused by dieting, so I think we can lay some blame on anything that's out there in society that provokes people to go on a diet. But anorexia, it's hard to know whether to call that a dieting illness, because anorexia has existed before there has ever been social media, ever been magazines showing slim women. So we think that anorexia is a different kind of eating disorder. It's a, it is a much more of a mental health problem, which is faced by young people who find the job of growing up a little bit too difficult.
With the issue, with the sort of the personality traits that you've described as may perhaps typical often of anorexic patients, high sensitivity, attention to detail, perfectionistic. Again, if parents are listening to that and they haven't got evidence that their child has an eating disorder, but they might be concerned about them having those traits, what is your best advice there in terms of how they might perhaps build up their resilience to those things happening?
Well, not everyone who's sensitive or perfectionist will get anorexia, so I need to give some reassurance there. And the problem is that, as Rebecca rightly said, an awful lot of the stuff that looks like an eating disorder is the kind of thing that young people do anyway, which is eating secret and wanting to eat differently from their parents. I think parents often know it's a problem before they're willing to admit there's a problem. So part of it is weight loss. Part of it is really bizarre eating habits, not wanting to eat at all the way the family does. Very high levels of exercise and withdrawal. So, I mean, one of the most common symptoms of anorexia is that the young person just doesn't seem to want to go out and have fun with their friends and mix. They shut themselves off. They seem to be very isolated. But I would say if you have any worry, if a parent has any worry, all they need to do is call an organization like ours and talk things through. And I can usually, and we're usually well-trained enough to ask the right questions and say, well, your daughter might have a problem, your son might have a problem. How would you feel about just taking them to the GP, have a couple of weighings, see if the weight's going down, talk to a teacher at school. It's often that the people at school know what's going on before the parents do, but they just don't really have the, you feel they've got a pathway to be able to talk to the parent or the child.
So Deanne, would you mind telling us a little bit about your national centre, please, and what help is available there?
Well, we started off for about 20 years ago where a group of like-minded people who were specialising in working with eating disorders got together and decided that there wasn't enough help out there in the health service to treat people with eating concerns. So we started off and we now have a programme where we train all our psychotherapists, coaches as well, counsellors, psychologists, psychiatrists, and we put them through examinations and then if they practice on their own. So if someone needs help, we can usually connect them to someone in their area and they can have some, generally an assessment, to find out if the problem is serious or it isn't. And if necessary, we can do some treatment or we can help a loved one, a husband, a parent, to go to a GP. We can write a letter for them and we can say to a GP, actually we think this is serious, even if the young person isn't at a very low weight, the illness may still be there and it may be getting worse. So we were able to treat, assess,
wonderful,
train psychotherapists, and we have a lot on the website as well, because as Rebecca said, once a parent knows the child's got an eating disorder, they're kind of in a new territory with no signposts.
No.
And it's really, really difficult to get help unless a young person is very, very ill. A doctor will often say, well, your child isn't ill enough yet or isn't at a very low weight.
Yeah.
And sometimes we need to catch them early. And the kind of things we would do, and this, I'm sure Rebecca would be familiar with this, is we don't just say to a young person, you have an eating disorder, you need to eat more or get better. We can do something called motivational therapy. So we can actually help the young person to feel very, very understood, so we can talk to the person who's been captured by the problem and help them to want to get better. And that is not too difficult if you're trained to do that. We can actually get right underneath the problem and help the person themselves want to get better.
Lovely.
But let's not pretend there are miracles. This is anorexia is an illness
with
an average length of about 7 years.
Yeah, which correlates completely to what Rebecca's daughter's experience was.
And some people do get better sooner, but some people take longer to get better. And the chances are that the earlier they get good help, the more likely they are to pull themselves out of this problem and not have it become chronic.
Well, Deanne, we're going to flag up your website on our Facebook page this evening and on social media. It's a National Centre for Eating Disorders, and as you say, it's a fantastic resource for anyone who's even worried about this topic and wants to, you know, have a discussion with your resident psychologists and other colleagues. So thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us.
You're
and yes, it was extremely useful discussion, and I'm sure you've helped a lot of parents listening tonight. So thanks again.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Radio Verla. And we're back on the Parents Show. We've had some extremely inspirational guests tonight. Rebecca Perkins, who shared her story earlier, and not recently just Deanne Jade, who's the founder of the National Centre for Eating Disorders. And now, to sort of round up the discussion, we're going to speak to a local GP and friend of the Parents Show, Alison Cowan. Are you there, Dr. Cowan?
I am. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Very, very good, thank you. And all the better for listening to those two amazing people, actually. I've learnt a lot from that as well.
Yes, really poignant stories and so much to think about. It's such a, what we're talking about tonight is such a complex topic. It's very, very difficult to cover much ground in an hour. But Alison, for local, you're a local GP in St. Albans.
Yes.
For local parents listening, you know, first of all, I mean, does this resonate with you that we're seeing a rise in children with eating disorders? Is that true locally as it seems to be nationally?
That's absolutely right. I think that's true. And it was interesting to hear Deanne mention that often the actual eating disorder starts way before that with problems with low self-esteem. We're certainly seeing a lot of youngsters coming through the surgeries with that as well. So it's interesting to see that it's a good point to pick up from that, you know, from that angle as well. But so, yeah, absolutely, it does reflect the national statistics.
So for people listening who are worried, is it okay for them to come to you alone? Do they have to drag their teenager, for example, along to see you? Or how do they initiate that discussion? What's your best advice?
I mean, often parents do raise it without their teenager there, because as has been pointed out, it's, you know, it can be quite a difficult topic, even between a mum and daughter or son, you know, let alone with a third party involved. So often it's raised without the person there, but then opportunity and appointment made when it can be discussed all together, or, you know, identified if actually there is need to take it further, which, you know, often there is, even if just to provide an angle of support.
And presumably, like, a lot of parents would be reticent to sort of, you know, bring them along as well, because they don't want to sort of name it, as Rebecca said, you know.
Yeah.
There's a reluctance to sort of acknowledge it for fear of what might come next.
That's right, yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think as Deanne pointed out, actually, sort of recognising that it is a problem is often the start of the way forward and the treatment. And although it can get worse initially, you know, with the right support and inputs, then they'll get better from that point on, really.
So what resources have we got locally? Where do you signpost patients and their children to? Sorry, to children to, yeah.
Yeah, so we've got an excellent eating disorders team that works under the Hertfordshire Partnership Foundation Trust. So that's our local community mental health services. So, you know, those in whom we suspect strongly of having an eating disorder will refer that way. But, you know, as both Rebecca and Jan pointed out, often there can be much lesser degrees, and it can be helpful to start to manage things and support families and teenagers way ahead of that sort of diagnostic label, if you like. And so knowing about these resources, you know, like the National Centre of through eating disorders, and there's another charity called beat.co.uk, b-eat.co.uk, that's got some good resources, you know, on as well.
Yes, and they have a helpline, don't they, that parents or teachers or any adult can ring, which we'll put up on our Facebook. That's, you mentioned it's BEAT, but it's b-eat.co.uk. So they're one organisation that are very useful. And indeed,
absolutely.
I think they have a helpline for young people under 25, the youth line, don't they?
Yes, they do. So, absolutely. So, and I believe that that's, you know, that has been quite helpful for new patients that I've come across before now.
And Alison, sorry, just within the realm of eating disorders, we're not just talking about diseases that are, you know, or disorders that may actually cause, you know, thinness and losing weight. Obesity is also considered as part of that family, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And as Deanne points out, compulsive eating habits. I guess wherever there's that element of control or, you know, anything that falls outside the norm, absolutely. And we're certainly facing an obesity epidemic in the future. So,
Well, Deanne mentioned that the prognosis for many of these disorders was good, but it can take a very long time. What's your sort of view on that?
Yeah, I'd agree. And it was interesting to hear Rebecca's reflection on how her daughter is now, and that there's still that sensitivity around food. So, yeah, that would certainly reflect my experience, and in a way is probably quite helpful for parents to know it's not a, and for patients themselves, that it's not a quick fix necessarily, but it's, you know, and it's something that, and it may take a little while, because I assume it can be quite frustrating, you know, if weight gain, if it's anorexia, or weight loss, if it, you know, if it's more obesity, is taking a while to change.
But obviously the first stop for many people is the GP, so...
Absolutely, yeah, it was, yeah, that's right. And way ahead of there being concerns necessarily about weight, or, you know, often at the low self-esteem stage, or, you know, anything like that, it's a good port of call.
Lovely. Well, thank you for your input. And
no
we're glad
problem.
That there seems to be, you know, resources available locally as well as nationally for parents listening.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks
Kathy.
A lot. Thanks a lot, Alison. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neve Solicitors, your complete legal solution.